From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
What about if the hospitals become so overrun that you're sick and you're dying have nowhere left to turn? Because I promise you, while you fail to take responsibility in your city and your county, that day is coming closer, and it will be on you. We will quickly reach the point when some form of a mandatory stay-at-home order is all that will be left. With every fiber of my being, I do not want us to get there. But right now, that seems like where we are heading.
Governor J.B. Pritzker issues warnings as COVID-19 numbers continue to go up. It's not the only problem that J.B. Pritzker has on his plate. He's got some tough budget decisions to make as well, and we'll discuss that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, we have Hannah Meisel. She's a reporter covering state government and politics for NPR Illinois. And joining us all the way from Washington, we have Dan Vock. He's the author of States of Crisis newsletter, and Dan is also a freelance reporter. Dan, it's good to have you on with us once again.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm going to start with the growing number of COVID-19 cases. This has really dominated the news over the past week. Hannah, just several weeks ago, as the positivity rate had dropped and really looking back into the summer, if you would have told me that another shutdown might be coming, I would have not believed it because it seemed as though people had gotten the message, things were a bit more under control, and yet here we are. So where do things stand as we sit down to record this this program here on Friday morning?
God, I can't decide whether I feel like it's March or whether I feel like it's April or whether I feel like this is, you know, a new sensation that we haven't been through before, because this second wave for Illinois, obviously there was a second wave in other states this summer, but it just feels like it appeared out of nowhere. And that's obviously that's the nature of a virus. It finds hosts and it grows exponentially, but it's very scary how bad things have gotten so quickly. And I know I said that a couple weeks ago on this program, but of course, you know, I couldn't have predicted where we are at today. So we have had 6 days. We haven't gotten our numbers yet when we're recording this, but we've had 6 days of new cases over 10,000. And for, you know, those out there who want to refer to this as a quote unquote case-demic, our hospitalization numbers have now exceeded where we were in the spring. And that hasn't been uniform across the state. So in the Chicago area, hospitalizations are not where they were in the spring, but in a lot of places, including here in central Illinois, hospitalizations are as much as three times, you know, where they were this spring at the peak.
Yeah, Hannah, also, when you, the governor put out some numbers this week, if I'm not mistaken, as bad as things look in Illinois, they look worse in these neighboring states all around Illinois.
That's right. I mean, Illinois is one of our defining features of, you know, our politics and our policy is that we are surrounded by five other states. And so it's very easy to, you know, look around to Iowa or Wisconsin or Indiana, depending on what part of the state you're in, and compare our, you know, in normal times, our business policies, our tax rates to them. And in COVID times, compare how lax or strict we're being, and now positivity rates. And so, for example, in Wisconsin, I think their positivity rate is in the high 40s. The governor mentioned yesterday that Iowa's positivity rate is 50%. And, you know, we have a lot of cross-border activity. And it's really hard, you know, in the beginning of all of this, when Illinois had a stay-at-home order and eventually the other states, you know, adopted some form of a stay-at-home order, you know, you had buy-in from the public. But now, we've talked about many times on this program, there is a definite pandemic fatigue. And so, yes, our positivity rate is in the low teens right now, which is obviously so much better than being in the high 40s or 50% from our neighboring states. But, you know, those neighboring states are affecting us. And I don't know. Like you said, I couldn't have predicted us talking about another stay-at-home order either, because in the summer, everything just seemed fine. You know,
yeah. Dan, you're in Washington, as I mentioned, and you, of course, covered Illinois quite a bit and still do. But your view from there, being outside the state, what does it look like is happening here in the state of Illinois?
Well, Sean, first of all, in Washington, D.C., we're not experiencing quite the surge. We are experiencing surge, but we're not at the levels of Illinois. What has happened is that the whole country, more or less, has entered a new surge. So this, unlike New York in the early spring or Arizona and Florida in the summer, this is pretty much nationwide. But the worst places have been in the upper Midwest. Hannah mentioned Wisconsin and Iowa. I would add Missouri. All three of those states have had very lax rules. In Wisconsin, the governor tried to impose some restrictions, and those were overturned by the courts. In Iowa and Missouri, the governors haven't been as interested. But that's why you're seeing the big surges are in the upper Midwest, up through the Dakotas, and even into Montana. I will say the reason that this matters in Illinois is that if you have a regional crisis and you are short of doctors and nurses and supplies, you can get that from other places in the country. But if 40 some odd states are experiencing a surge, then you're really it's really difficult to get that, you know, flood of resources from other places. So you're seeing staff shortages in hospitals throughout the country. And this is something I wrote about last week, but that means that, you know, there's not a lot of places to turn to. And that, I think, is why it's so concerning, on top of what Hannah was talking about with sort of the cross-border traffic. You also have this problem of limited resources.
Yeah, Charlie, I want to get your thoughts on this as well. As somebody who's been following this every week and paying really close attention to what's been happening here, we've seen this surge coming now for several weeks. We've been noticing it, and the governor this week coming across talking about the possibility of another shutdown, that type of thing. I mean, things are getting serious.
Yeah, and it's gotten a lot worse. And the governor had some statistics that he used at his news conference. And if not to bore people, but I'll read them off. And he had a presentation. Since October 1st, Illinois has seen a 459% increase in cases, a 250% increase in case positivity, a 217% increase in deaths, a 179% increase in hospitalizations, and a 161% increase in patients on ventilators. And I think, at least among some folks, they looked at where it was in the spring. Things began to look a lot better. The numbers went down as we headed into the summer months, where it's warmer, you can be outside more. There's no controversy about whether kids should be in school or not, because it's summer vacation. There really aren't any major holidays other than the 4th of July, and the 4th of July is more a time of picnics than it is people gathering inside their homes. And now here we are, we just got past Halloween, and it was suggested by some of the experts that the surge here in central Illinois was people going to Halloween parties and not taking proper precautions. We're looking at Thanksgiving and then Christmas, and it's just really grim. And until people start taking it seriously, in my judgment, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And taking it seriously means wearing a mask all the time, not going anywhere unless you absolutely have to, and saying to your relatives, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to come to your house for Thanksgiving dinner because of the virus. And if people are willing to do that, we can maybe get a handle on it. Otherwise, we're going to be in, as Dan suggested, we're going to be in really critical condition. We're going to run out of hospital staffing. We're going to run out of beds. And it's not just COVID people, obviously, that hospitals treat. People who are in automobile accidents, people who have heart attacks, who have strokes, they need those hospital facilities as well. And we're nearing the point where we're getting full up. And I know there have been some hospitals, even in Illinois, that have been sending people with less severe injuries somewhere else.
Well, before we move on to some other topics, Hannah, I want to give you the last word on this. We're talking about this surge. Charlie just mentioned we're heading into the holidays, into the winter months. That's concerning. Yet we did get some positive news earlier in the week that maybe a vaccine could be on the way soon. Still a long time to get that out to people and really have an impact. But, you know, there's some positives there. At the same time, the governor coming out this week mentioning the fact and really warning that we could be headed toward another shutdown. What is the likelihood that that's going to happen? That's something I can't imagine he truly wants to do because of the economic impact it would have. But you know, how close could we be to that?
I mean, he said it this week. We are running out of options. And, you know, so I am of two minds on this. I'm, you know, a lot of people have lots of trolls who tweet at me, you know, about, you know, this is fake, this is whatever. But honestly, one made a pretty good point this week. I felt like when you drive people, when you, you know, shut down segments of the economy and you say you can't, you know, hang out at a restaurant, at a bar, or whatever, you're providing an incentive to those who kind of don't care to just hang out at home, which is honestly, you know, riskier because you don't have, you know, restaurant managers who are worried about getting cited by the health department or whatever. So there's that on the one hand. It's true that a lot of these new cases are coming from people hanging out in, you know, private residences, and the state really can't do anything about that. We don't live in a police state. But on the other hand, you know, it's about, like, in behavioral economics, there's the concept of, like, signals. So the governor issuing another stay-at-home order would be a big signal to people that, like, oh yeah, this is getting bad again. And, you know, you could have the power of family members convincing other family members that actually, no, we do need to take this seriously. We do need to limit contact. And that comes from the top. It's the signals, like, you know, a few weeks ago, the governor decided to go back to doing daily COVID press conferences after a summer without them. And so it's a signal from the top of state government that, you know, things are getting bad. And, you know, we have limited options, but this is what we're going to use from our arsenal.
Part of it too is you need buy-in from local officials. The governor puts down these guidelines, and then you have sheriffs and mayors saying, well, we're going to ignore those because it's going to be bad for our bar owners if we actually cause them to close earlier or limit the number of people. And that's not fair to them. And I can't help thinking there are currently more than 10,000 people who this time last year were looking forward to Thanksgiving. And now, good Lord willing, they're watching from above as their relatives mourn them because they died of COVID-19. And I think that's the reality. We have to say, oh yes, I really don't like wearing a face mask, but on the other hand, maybe it'll save somebody's life. I really wish I could go hang out at the bar, but on the other hand, if I sit in my room and drink a six pack, I'm not harming anybody except maybe my own liver. You know, it's got to have the sense of community that I'm going to limit what I do for the sake of other people.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and we have freelance reporter Dan Vock with us as well. And Dan, let's turn our attention to the veto session, which now apparently will not be happening as the Illinois legislature deciding to postpone it due to concerns about the coronavirus. And this comes on the heels of the governor's graduated income tax proposal failing during the recent election. The governor has already said painful cuts could be coming, and he mentioned this week he's going to continue work on the budget with legislative leaders even without the session occurring here. So what are the governor's options here going forward?
Well, to be quite honest, Sean, he doesn't have a lot of great options. The strategy going forward when they crafted the budget had a couple components. One was that the graduated income tax would pass, and that would bring in some money for this year. It was actually more for a long-term thing, but it would have helped. The other big component that's missing from the budget that lawmakers passed this spring is federal help. And frankly, as the months have gone by, it's become clear that not only would it be difficult for Congress to agree to a major relief package, and we're talking economy-wide, not just for states, but in fact that any relief for states and blue states and Illinois specifically, which is sometimes being held up as the poster child of a, quote, mismanaged state, that's actually a sticking point to why they can't get the larger package through. All that to say, that money that the governor and many legislators had hoped would be coming from Washington doesn't look like it'll be coming anytime soon. So with all those things combined with the drop in revenue from COVID and the recession that they're expecting as a result, really kind of limits the options for the governor. One option that is still on the table, but doesn't look like a very appetizing one, is that the Federal Reserve has a program that will let states and municipalities borrow at a low rate from it in order to sort of get through the coronavirus pandemic. It has a low interest rate, but on the other hand, it has to be paid back within 3 years. So Illinois is the only state that's actually already used that. The MTA, the transit agency in New York has used it too, but they could go back to that. But then that just sets up an even tougher budget for the years to come. So I think you're going to see a lot. There's going to have to be cuts. They're going to have to show the public that they're serious. And I don't think that you get to the other option, which is a bigger tax increase of some sort, whether it's sales tax, flat tax rates increased, unless you can show the public that you are taking this financial crisis seriously and that you are making cuts. Now that the governor doesn't want to make those cuts, his argument is that this is the exact wrong time to cut, you know, healthcare, social services, education funding. But I don't think that there's a way that you can get to any sort of revenue increases before there's pretty big spending cuts.
Well, back in the spring, the legislature, I mean, really the Democrats in the legislature authorized borrowing from that Federal Reserve, loan program up to $5 billion. We've only taken advantage of a small segment of that. I can't remember how much exactly so far, but, you know, part of, you know, paying it back in 3 years is a pretty heavy lift. And that's what part of the reason the governor was relying on his graduated income tax proposal, which of course went down in flames. And now he's, you know, like Dan said, out of options. But let's also remember that basically the governor is going to start campaigning for his reelection now. Obviously, you know, it would be in poor taste to do something like hold rallies or whatever. And also, you know, he is a billionaire, so he can self-fund. He doesn't need to go to donors. So he can quietly build up a team. But it's very politically unpopular to say, okay, let's raise the flat tax now, even though he's been threatening it. You know, if they're going to do it, they have to act fast. So people's memories will fade by the time it's election day 2022. Or, I don't know. There's also a group of pretty moderate Democrats. They came out this week and said, well, maybe we should look at instead, we should look at closing these corporate tax loopholes. And Illinois does give out a fair amount of tax credits, you know, incentivized to bring businesses here or keep them here. But they've had a spotty track record, and you know, some people, especially on the left, refer to it as corporate welfare. And so maybe it is time to reform that. But I don't know how much savings you're going to get out of that. There are no easy solutions here.
Yeah, Charlie, you've covered good and bad times for the state budget through the years. Where do you place this current situation?
I would say it's not quite as bad as it was a couple of years back when we had the budget impasse and we had our unpaid bills. I believe it reached the bill backlog a total of $16.7 billion. Well, Friday morning, our backlog was at 8 o'clock on Friday morning, Friday the 13th, was $7.992 billion, according to the comptroller's office, with roughly 82,000 vouchers that she's sitting on. And I think the average citizen really doesn't understand how the state spends its money. There was a story in the Belleville paper the other day about talking to people who were so happy that the so-called fair tax amendment went through. And the one woman said, well, they just need to cut out all this waste and abuse. And I'm thinking to myself, ma'am, would you please look at how the state spends its money? Now, interestingly, she's a retired teacher, and in the current budget, the appropriations laid out by the General Assembly and signed by the governor last spring, the teachers' pension system is going to get $5 billion. Pension systems in total are going to get $8.6 billion out of our general funds. That's 22% of the general fund's budget. The State Board of Education for evidence-based funding is going to get $7.2 billion, which is $500 million less than what the board asked for. The money to pay health care costs for people on Medicaid and senior citizens in nursing homes is 20% of the budget. Human services is another 18%. So there's really not any waste and mismanagement. And the people who are arguing that we need to do something, one of the first things they say is, well, we have to change the Constitution so we can reduce the amount of money we have to pay for pensions. But I would suggest to them the earliest that you can change the Constitution is in the fall of 2022, when we will be two budget years away from where we are now. Something has to happen. And Hannah suggested that, well, we can do away with some of the tax breaks. Unfortunately, the two largest tax breaks, if you want to call them that, by a huge margin, are the fact that the sales tax is not applied to groceries, food, and medicine. And the second is that retirement income is not taxed. And I can't see the desire in the General Assembly to impose any of those types of taxes in the near future. So I think what's likely to happen is we'll make some cuts. The governor has suggested that he's already made a number of efficiencies within the agencies, and the budget walk down that his Office of Management and Budget provided the other day shows that they are intending to not spend more than $1 billion that they were authorized to spend. They're not going to spend it. And I assume that's the efficiencies to which he's referring. But you still have the problem of how do you close this $3.9 billion gap, according to his walk down? And I don't think you can do it by cuts. You're going to have to raise additional revenue.
Dan, we only have about a minute left here, but I wanted to touch base with you. You followed the Illinois Supreme Court for a long time. Thomas Kilbride did not win retention. There was another justice put in his place will be put in his place starting in December until 2022. Republicans are hoping they can target that district and maybe gain a majority on the court. Just real quick, only about 30 seconds or so now, but are Republicans looking at some of the things Charlie talked about maybe some type of change for the pension system, possibly going back before the court later if they have a majority?
Well, I think it's all speculative at this point, but there was an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune where Jim Nolan, who helped lead the campaign to defeat Justice Kilbride, mentioned that possibility. I think there are going to be three Supreme Court races in 2022. Those are all potentially competitive. There is a possibility that Republicans could do that. I will say, though, that the Supreme Court has repeatedly and very unambiguously said, even in the middle of budget crises, that the pension clause in the Illinois Constitution is very clear, and they're not going to let Illinois decide it doesn't have to pay what it owes for those retirees. And a lot of them, as you mentioned, or Charlie mentioned, are teachers.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Hannah, let's go to you first.
Sure. So House Republican Leader Jim Durkin, he has the votes to have another term as that minority leader of that caucus. And he had faced a challenger, Tony McCombie. She's from Savannah in Northwest Illinois, but seems like she withdrew that challenge. And I think it's interesting because we started out 2020 with a very contentious race to be next Senate president. And, we also last week, Republican Senate leader Bill Brady announced that he wasn't going to run again for that job after a pretty poor showing for that caucus in the election. And then if House Speaker Mike Madigan, if he does, get ousted in January, then we're going to have three or four new caucus leaders. And I think that dynamic will be very interesting going forward.
All right. And Dan?
Yeah, just one caveat about the Illinois Supreme Court. So the Illinois Constitution says that the districts outside of Cook County have to have equal populations. And there will be elections in three of the four districts in 2022. But I ran the numbers, and the last, in 2018, the second district, which is up in northern Illinois, in DuPage County, Lake County up there, has about 3.2 million residents. The one in farthest southern Illinois is 1.27 million. So I only bring this up because there is a constitutional mandate that the districts be equal in population. There are a whole bunch of elections coming up, a lot of turnover. And if the legislature wanted to balance out the districts, whether for partisan reasons or just for good government one, it seems like this might be the time to do it.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and author Dan Vock. He's also a freelance reporter. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.